Welcome to Profiles in Risk, the INS Nerds podcast, the only recurring podcast dedicated to insurance careers, insurtech startups, and insurance current events. We are your hosts, Carly Burnham, Tony Cañas, and Nick Lamparelli. You can find all of our podcasts, show notes, and other great insurance-related content at insnerds.com. Now, on to the show.
Welcome to Profiles in Risk, the INS Nerds podcast. My name is Nick Lamparelli. As usual, my co-hosts this week are Carly Burnham and Tony Cañas, which means, of course, the band is back together. After a few weeks hiatus where one of us was always missing, Tony, Carly, hello.
Hello, Nick.
How's it going?
It's going well. Welcome back. So,
thank you.
So this particular week, we are going to discuss an article that by the time this podcast goes live, I will have published at INS Nerds on digitally native insurers. And essentially, in this insurtech environment, we have a bunch of startups that are insurance companies, and they're digital by nature. They have digital backbone. They're basically distributed via the internet, and they will probably become the thing in the future and in what everyone is sort of striving for. And so, Tony, Carly, we're going to spend this particular episode talking about that. And so to sort of get things started, you guys have seen the articles. We'll post this on the show notes for a company called Hippo, which is a digitally native insurer coming out in California. And of course, everyone's familiar with our favorite digitally native insurer, Lemonade. So initial thoughts, Carly, Tony, we'll start, Carly, we'll start with you. What is your thought process as regards to digitally native insurers? Where do you think we're going with this? Do you think it's about time? Do you think we're a few years late? Give me your initial thoughts.
I think we're probably a few years late, but I am curious to see how new entrants fare. I would have expected to see legacy insurers adopt more quickly in an ideal world. And I am concerned about the stability long-term of the new entrants.
Tony?
I'm really excited. What do you, you know, I'm the designated excited guy, right? I usually write the love article and then Nick writes the critical article. So in this case, I am really excited. I do agree that the industry has been late, which is not surprising. It's a classic innovator's dilemma. And add to that, the fact that we are in an industry where being conservative has paid off, right? We've talked about that in the past. The conservative underwriters are the companies that are still around. So it's an industry where nobody wants to be the first one, right? Everybody wants to be a fast follower or even a slow follower. Hippo in particular, I'm really excited about for a few reasons. First of all, most of the insurtech companies have focused on price, and Hippo does have a focus on price kind of in the background, but their like upfront message is a better product, a better way to sell it. In fact, they really, it's built on top of an ISO homeowners policy with a few endorsements that modernize it and make it better. And the second thing I'm excited about Hippo is that most insurtech companies are tech people. If you look at the board of directors, they're all tech people. Hippo has real insurance, like real heavy duty, respectable, in my opinion, insurance people. In fact, one of the main guys is a CPCU, CIC, 20 years in the industry, used to run Superior Access. Like he's been around the block. He's a real insurance guy. So I really like that about them.
Okay. So let's run through, I published an article at INS Nerds on, you know, mental model on how you can evaluate insurtech companies. So let's run through that. Tony, you already kind of jumped the gun. I always start out with when I'm examining an insurtech company, the first thing I look at is what are they doing with the exposure? Are they doing anything unique, different? Are they rearranging it? So, Tony, you brought up with HIPPO that they have a base ISO policy, and what I wrote in my article is they've added enhancements to it to make it more modern. So a lot of the coverages are more geared towards millennials and replacement of digital type of equipment. Lemonade, I'm not so sure. You know, from an exposure perspective, they're just like basically piggybacking on ISO. So, you know, can you guys comment on the exposure side? Do you see, as digital insurers come in, and you're both underwriters, will they have what are the challenges they could potentially have? Will they have the ability to change the way exposure gets underwritten? Can they quantify it differently? Can they package it differently? What's your sense as these new companies come in?
I think on the personal line side, it's a little bit interesting. I was thinking a bit about this. It sort of relates to exposure. They talk in the article about the ability to pull a lot of data from external sources about homes and provide the quote immediately without having to verify it through the customer or gather it from the customer. So a lot of insurers have that ability right now. They use a system that does pull in data about the home. So you're already getting that, but we still expect that someone goes through and fills out an application and has a conversation with the customer. So there's two perspectives on it, right? Perspective one is, why are we wasting our time getting it from the customer when we already have it? The second perspective is, how do I know that this data that's being pulled is correct? And how does that start out the relationship with the customer?
Okay.
Are they comfortable having it pulled?
So Tony, we'll get to the whole application and the whole what Carly just brought up from the exposure side. Is Carly basically on the right track? Can these digital insurers actually pull information or pull together information that's going to be any different than what State Farm or Nationwide or any personal lines company can pull? So I'm specifically talking about HIPPO and Lemonade, and I mentioned in my article Kin Insurance. Can they do anything with the exposure that's any different than any other personal lines company, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think so. No, number one, by not having the jumble and mess of legacy systems from the 80s, they can much more easily truly integrate whatever data is out there, right? Let's assume that ultimately with time we all have access to the same databases. The big difference is a company like HIPPO, natively digital company, can much more easily bring all that unstructured and structured data. Things like your social media, right? Things like your Twitter.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Things that a normal carrier has a much harder time playing with. Even if we all have access to the same data. So I do think that if done well, a company like HIPPO could apply much more easily, apply artificial intelligence, machine learning, big data techniques to analyze your entire social media. Okay, the perfect example, I think I messaged you both. One of our listeners actually clued me in, and we're going to have him later in a few weeks, or we might have already had him. Anyway, one of our listeners clued me into the service called Growth. What is it, Carly? You remember Growth?
GrowthBot,
I think. Yeah. So anyway, you go to GrowthBot, and it, they have a Facebook Messenger chatbot, and you literally go personality profiles for and anybody's email. So I did Carly. I did myself. I think I did Nick too. And I did my girlfriend. The personality profile that came back was amazingly accurate. Now, they couldn't do everybody. They couldn't do two of my girlfriend's siblings. They couldn't do because they just don't post much publicly, right? They're a little more reserved. But for people like us who are kind of out there on social media, it was able to hit us like on the dot. Like it was like, I think Carly referred to it as freaky, or abusive almost.
Yeah.
So just imagine that is their free tool. Imagine if a company like Hippo could dig into the paid version of that and really dig into, you know, is Tony likely to be renting his place out on Airbnb without telling us? Is Tony likely to be driving Uber without telling us? Is Tony likely to be throwing crazy parties in his apartment or, you know, doing other high risk things in his apartment or in his house that is going to lead to losses? So I do think that they're absolutely in a better place to do that than the traditional carriers are.
This is one of the advantages of having a podcast the night before an article is supposed to go live, because you just gave me like three ideas that I can insert in that I completely forgot about. But that is actually a very good point. You know, I was really struggling to try to figure out what are these companies going to, where are they going to get their data? How is it going to be different than what we're traditionally doing? But yes, as a digitally native company, they can build in the machine learning, the AI,
so
all of that, right?
But that's not what the article is talking about, right? The article is talking about getting characteristics of the home.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. but
it's not different. They have the opportunity to, but they're not right now thinking in that forward fashion.
So I have already had a conversation with the main guy from Hippo. It was yesterday. And they're not doing it yet, but I do think that it is the logical thing for them to do kind of in the midterm.
Well, Carly.
And then secondarily, it is a logical thing for them to do in the midterm, and it makes sense, but how do you sell that to regulators?
Ooh, that's right. That's why we need a regulator on the show, because that is a hard one. But you gotta remember that the regulators are unhappy on the auto side. I don't know about the home side, but on the auto side, the regulators have a lot of pressure from the public about things like using gender or sex, things like using your zip code, because in our country right now, zip code things like using insurance credit score, right? Things like that can be good proxies for income, right? And people don't like the idea of their income being used for their insurance to be more expensive, even if it is predictive of higher claims. So I think that regulators will be more friendly to the idea of things like social media. But then
will
again,
they?
I don't know a single regulator.
Will they?
Privacy,
you know, so Tony, you I got all excited when you brought up machine learning and AI, and then Carly was the cold bucket of water on me, because Carly, you're right. There's no way. Look how long it took and how much lobbying and fighting it took just to get credit scores to be part of the rating process. Now, I bet they can use machine learning and AI as part of the underwriting process, you know, for marketing, you know, trying to design an underwriting strategy, an underwriting guideline document, but rating, no way. There's right. No way an regulator is going to allow the use of social media and some, you know, proprietary machine learning algorithm to be part of the rating process.
And I think not just rating, but underwriting, to the extent that I don't see that being a reason to accept or decline a policy. I don't see that being allowable.
Mm. Good points. Good points, both of you. We need to get the regulator on to help us figure out.
You better understand this, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that's the exposure side. Let's go to the distribution side. And Carly, you have already touched on it. And it's essentially, I think we're going to all be in agreement here. Filling out a 50-question application in this day and age is just ridiculous. Agree or disagree?
Absolutely agree. Absolutely ridiculous.
So I think one of the one of the things I do like about these digitally native insurers is that with their technology backbone, they are trying to Amazon this thing. They're basically trying to one-click the purchase. I don't know if they can do it the way that they're claiming they can do it. But, you know, Carly, if I would assume that you would agree that being able to just answer a handful of questions is probably ideal, or let me rephrase this. Not asking a question that you as the underwriter can already get the answer for.
I agree on the application side, but I get concerned that insurance is based on trust. So how do I build that trust with my customer if I can't take the time to have a conversation with them up front?
Secondarily, they already don't trust us.
I don't know that that's true. We've talked about this before. You're right. There are people who don't trust us, but there are customers who are very happy. Most customers are very happy. Most customers who've had a claim are happy in the end. A lot of customers have very good, very strong relationships with their local agents still.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
And we had that conversation with Sean Mooney about that there are just people that want to talk to someone. But I don't think these companies are marketing to those people. I think these companies are really looking at the millennial market space, that segment, the people that don't want to talk.
Okay.
So they cannot expect loyalty. They have to be building the system to assume that they're going to be price shopped every year. Or okay, service shopped. If you're Hippo, if you say you have a better service, someone's going to go out and service shop you. And they're going to leave on a dime.
I think that Nick comes right. Both Hippo and Lemonade and Root are going, and Metro Mile, are going after the growing millennial population, which is not only growing in number of adults who are millennials, but they are growing in financial wherewithal, right? And the amount of money they control, they're quickly becoming the generation that controls the bulk of the income. So there is a limit, though, to the buy it in an app distribution model, or buying it won't reach everybody. And even after, give it 10 years where, you know, the boomers will be a lot less important in the economy when it comes to total amount of income controlled. There will be a lot of people who don't want to do it this way, and that'll continue for a while. So I think there's a limit to how much you can grow, but this is insurance. Like even State Farm, the biggest personal lines carrier in the country by a lot, doesn't control 60% of the market, right? Like in this market, controlling 10 or 15% makes you huge. So a company like Hippo, if it grew into all 50 states and it managed to get 5 to 10% of the homeowners market, would be a massive gorilla of a company, right?
Yes,
that's true.
Yes. But have you seen their websites?
Yeah. Yes.
They I went through Coverager. So I looked at the work Sheffy has done on Lemonade and now Hippo. They're so similar. Like the workflow is similar. The cartoonish feel, very, very similar. Different colors, but very similar. So from a distribution play, so Kippo is in California. Lemonade is in New York and has just expanded to Illinois. And Kin is in Florida. They have not stepped on each other's toes. So my question to both of you is there room for a bunch of digitally native homeowners insurers? Once they start stepping on each other's toes, can they all survive? Can they all succeed? Can they all thrive? Or is this, from a digital play, is this a winner take all?
They'll start buying each other out. and it'll become a largely winner take all kind of market is my best guess.
Carly?
I would agree. Yeah, I would agree. I don't see anyone having who's going to go through three online quotes. What differentiates them? What's the point of spending your time going through the same app?
I agree. I think they can survive, but I think they're going to have to be, they can only survive if they differentiate themselves into particular pockets. Like Hippo is. Go ahead, Tony.
I think Hippo is already doing that. Hippo.
Yeah.
While the marketing might look a lot like Lemonade, they're not at all pretending to be Lemonade. Lemonade is very much aiming for the renter and doing a few homeowners. And Hippo is very much going for the homeowner and for the higher value homeowner with their expanded coverage kind of thing. So I don't think they're going after the same market. Yeah, it's the same distribution type.
Sure. Yeah. But that I think that's the point where I'm getting to. I think it seems as though Lemonade is going to start getting pigeonholed into the low cost digital provider, cheap coverage, inexpensive coverage, because they're all quick. They all claim to be quick. So they have that in common. Hippo is already coming out and they're saying our coverage is, we're expanding our coverages. So we start with ISO, we're expanding it and we're making it more aligned with millennials. I can't really tell. I know they're in Florida, but they're digitally native, so they're quick. But I can't really tell if there's any kind of exposure advantage or differentiation. But if I think being the front runner gives them an advantage if they're going to stay on that track. If they are trying to compete against each other, then it's going to be a winner take all. I can't see how. A bunch of digital companies can all compete to the same marketplace.
Kin, if you read their frequently asked questions on Kin's website as of right now, right? We're recording this. I don't know if I saved the date. Okay, never mind. As of right now, Kin's website is not as pretty. It's not as modern as the other two. However, in their frequently asked questions section, they say, but the reason that they're Illinois, they're Chicago-based, and they're not insuring Illinois. They're insuring Florida, which is the hardest state in the union to do homeowners in because of catastrophe risk, right? Nick's an expert in this. And they say specifically that the reason they're doing Florida is because where there is more risk, there is more chance for their better big data ability to succeed. So basically, they're saying that they're going after places like Florida and Southern Texas, places that have big catastrophe exposures, because they feel that they can do that better than others. Now, will they blow themselves up doing that? That's a good question. And by the way, earlier we talked about what if they blow themselves up, will they survive? I don't think it really matters if they survive. I mean, it matters to the venture capitalists that are investing there, and maybe even to the people that work there. But probably
to the people who file claims with them.
No, that's the point. For the consumer, the state guarantee funds are going to cover them. And in the case of Hippo is not actually a carrier. As of right now, Hippo's an agency, not a carrier. They're going through an older, not like 100 years old, but like 25, 30, I think like 30-some-year-old California carrier. I can't remember the name. I wasn't familiar with them. But they're not the carrier themselves, like Lemonade is.
Yeah.
So Lemonade, we've talked about it. They're kind of a combo carrier slash broker.
Well, it's good that you brought that up, because that's part of the distribution and the next part of the mental model, which is capital and capital utilization. So let's pause right there. Let's take a break for our sponsor. And when we come back, let's pick up right where we left off, Carly, talking about the business model that these companies are taking. So let's pause and we'll come right back. Hey, everyone. You know the signs you occasionally see on the highway that say advertise here? Well, that's what this spot is for. We are seeking sponsors for Profiles in Risk. If you are a company looking to connect and advertise to thousands of dedicated, eager insurance professionals, then please consider sponsoring Profiles in Risk. For your sponsorship, you will receive a 15 to 30 second promotion in the middle of the podcast, along with a thank you message at the intro and at the ending of the podcast. We will also carry your logo on each marketing communication that we send out. So if you are interested, please visit us at the Contact Us link on our website at insnerds.com. Now back to the show. Okay, we're back. So where we left off was we were talking about Hippo, Lemonade, Kin, the digital insurers. So Carly, I want to go to you and talk about specifically the business model that these companies have undertaken to go digital. Hippo and Kin are agents. They're not actually taking the risk. Lemonade is an insurer. They have a complicated business structure, but essentially they want to tout themselves an insurer. Their venture capital is going to the insurance space. Advantages or disadvantages of going one route or the other?
Going as an agency would probably be advantageous. They're backed by someone who has strong capital, but it does give them less freedom. Depending on who's doing the product, who's driving the product creation. Is this agency or is it a carrier?
Does it matter if it's ISO-based?
It doesn't matter, except that you want to add an enhancement to make your product better if you're Hippo. And so who's creating that and who is...
I think that the one that has an advantage when it comes to operating model is Lemonade. I don't like it from the hard-to-understand, complicated part, but I do think that it might be the right move is be your own carrier so that you have a lot of flexibility. We insure almost all the risk, which every small carrier has to, but also have a broker front where you can collect your percentage up front, right? I think that model could take off. It could. I don't know, right? It's hard to break because nobody, okay. As far as I know, nobody's right. Done it in the past. But it's the more innovative of, yeah. Of the model.
So it's definitely more innovative.
To me, I think it's
correcting my.
Yeah, to me,
Hold on.
Carly, said you're correct.
I'm making fun of my accent. You know that I'm not a native Spanish, not a native English speaker, right? Like we're gonna have to send you to cultural sensitivity training.
I want to make sure our listeners know what's happening.
So, what is the correct word? Innovative.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Okay. I'm not sure.
No, I was actually just trying to agree with you, but that's okay.
Okay.
Tony's so sensitive. Anyway. How did you originally pronounce it?
I said innovative.
Okay. I didn't even catch that. That's excellent.
It's one of those things, you know, the accent comes out every once in a while.
We need to create a shirt with that pronounced and, you know, with all those symbols that pronounce the word,
but
and we break it out with the INS Nerds logo on it. That's excellent.
Okay. I like
okay.
it.
So in essence here, I think I like that they're taking different tacks when it comes to the distribution model, because I think it's trade-offs. Carly brought up the freedom to build your product. If you're an agent that's partnering with an insurance company, you have to get approval. You know, you have to kind of work through that process. Lemonade doesn't have to do that. Lemonade can kind of make it as they go. But alternatively, from the agent side, they're not limited also to one company. I could see at some point Hippo or Kin or any of these other digitally native companies that are selling policies, partnering with multiple insurance companies and kind of bringing back the aggregators that have somewhat disappeared. So it's almost like trade-offs. Maybe they can both survive just in different kinds of models. But I almost think right now with Lemonade not really innovating on the coverage side, that's going to be a drawback. You know, they have the ability, they have the freedom to innovate, but they're only innovating in, you know, their website and in this whole charity model thing that they're doing. They're not really, Hippo has come out and they've been innovative right from the start.
Because Lemonade, they're not insurance people, right? The guy at Hippo, being a long-time insurance professional, he's got frustrations like we all do, right? He's got things that he's been frustrated about insurance for his whole career. He has the chance now to really make a difference in those. The Lemonade guys might be brilliant tech people, and I love Dan Ariely, and I'm so glad that Dan Ariely is now somehow involved in the insurance industry. But they don't have this, you know, 20, 30 year long-term view on insurance. It's something that's very hard. And I know it sounds arrogant for us to say that, but this is a very weird industry, right? An industry where we are highly regulated by 50 separate states, where we don't know the cost of the product. We don't know the cost of the product we sell. Like, think about that from a business perspective, like any business student out there. We sell a product, we don't know how much it costs, sometimes until years and years, sometimes until decades later. It is a crazy business model. Yeah. So it is very hard for somebody that's never worked in this to really get
true.
That.
True, but Lemonade has hired insurance people.
Yeah, they've got a former Liberty guy. Yeah, I hear you, but it doesn't appear that the insurance people are the ones driving the car there.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, it really feels like the tech people are the ones driving the car. Yeah. While at Hippo, I get a feeling that and again, I had a conversation with the guy at Hippo. I have not with anybody at Lemonade. So it's hard to compare apples to apples.
Sure. So, okay, then let's transition to the final piece of how I look at insurtech companies and these new digital startups is operations. Can you bring value to operations? I think we will all agree that a digitally native company has a huge advantage when it comes to operations. Carly?
I would agree. On the Hippo, I think with Hippo trying to incorporate the sensors into their product, that's adding an additional operation, and that's definitely going to be helpful.
They're going to be able to collect a lot of data.
Yes.
I love that. I do. I do think that 10 years from now, most insurers are going to have that built in. I just don't see how you can't combine the risk mitigation with the insurance product. But, you know, Tony, what about just simply from accounting claims, just being able to keep track of it all in a digital environment and not having everyone keystroking all of those pieces in? I mean, that's just a monster advantage.
Yep. No, the systems advantage is no question on that. By the way, Motorist Insurance out of Columbus, Ohio, just opened a little startup. It's commercial lines within their operation. It's in the same building, but it's technically a separate company. I think that's one of the big advantages you're going to have. It's brand new systems, it's completely Guidewire based. So even though they're small, they're going to have best in class systems. Yeah, I think that's a huge advantage over, you know, when they're competing with a Travelers or a CNA or wherever else in the commercial lines market, they're going to be able to service that customer so much more easily with their employees not having to go to 10 systems to check things out.
Well, I think, surprisingly, I think the small business arena is where the predominance of the action is currently residing with these digitally native companies. I mean, Berkshire has a small business digitally native operation. There's the brokerage firms, MBroker and CoverHound. There's actually a lot going on there. We probably should devote an entire podcast to the small business area when it comes to this specific area, because it's probably more exciting than the homeowners. But I, you know, we just we happened to run into those homeowner articles this week, so that was a good topic to go on. Okay, so natively digital insurers, thumbs up, thumbs down?
No, thumbs up, absolutely. Now, execution will be the question, right? We don't know how well they'll execute, but it's a big, for me, like, it's a big thumbs up when it comes to whether they will, whether one of them will be successful. I don't know if the one that will be successful has already been started or not, but one of them will be successful. What do you think, Carly?
I think it's a thumbs up. I hope that they can mitigate the concerns that I have about helping their customers actually understand what they're purchasing. That's my biggest fear.
Sure,
I agree completely. And I my biggest complaint about them has been that their focus before HIPPO has always seemed to be, we'll get you a quote faster and cheaper, not mm-hmm. we'll get you the right quote or the right coverage. I like that HIPPO's focusing more on coverage.
I look at it as there's the low-cost provider, and then there are companies like Chubb that don't even pretend to be the low-cost provider. You know, they're on the other end. And then there's, you know, a bunch in between that kind of niche focus here and there. I think there's room, but again, it's about execution.
My conversation with the main guy from HIPPO, and notice that I haven't said his name because I'm so bad with names, with Rick McCarson. I don't know how much of the conversation I can reveal, but I can definitely share that from his perspective, what the insurtech companies are doing, including his, is not causing massive disruption. Basically, what he said is the reality is we get a lot of press, but the market is so gigantic that we can become a giant company and not really disrupt the market.
Yeah, it's very true. It's very true. Okay, well, that's going to end this segment of our podcast, and we're going to transition to a new segment, a game that I hope we can continue week after week. It's called Rank the Risk, where I ask Tony and Carly hopefully challenging and insightful questions about risk and test their acumen on it. And so I don't know if you guys know, but spring is the official start of tornado season in the United States. So we're going to play Rank the Risk, and it's going to be tornado themed. So I'm going to ask you a series of questions where I want you to rank the risk from riskiest to less risky.
Four tornado.
1 to 5, 1 to 10, 1 to 3. Okay.
Okay.
We're going to put them in order, basically.
1, 2, and 3, 1 being the riskiest, 3 being the least risky. Okay. Yes.
And you need to write it down so that we can verify that whoever goes last is not cheating. You can write it on your phone if you prefer. You'll just have to show it to the camera.
Let me ask you the first question. Okay. So we know that there's a place called Tornado Alley, but I wanted to ask you tornadoes by state. Which states? I'm going to give you three. I'm going to give you three states. I want you to rank the states 1, 2, and 3 by which states have the most tornadoes. 1, Nebraska. 2, Texas. 3, Florida.
Most tornadoes per year, Nick?
On average.
On average, okay.
Okay, I got my answer.
Yep, I'm good.
Okay. Tony, which state has the most? The audience can't see, but Tony's flashing it on the webcam. Which state has the most tornadoes? Which state do you think has the most tornadoes?
I think Texas would be number 1, Nebraska number 2, and Florida number 3.
Carly?
Nebraska, Texas, Florida.
Okay. Number 1, Texas.
Yeah! Woohoo!
Number 2, and the reason why I put this in is because I thought it would be a little bit of a surprise. Number 2 is Florida out of those three
states. That is a surprise.
Florida gets a lot of tornadoes. It's not in Tornado Alley, but it gets as many tornadoes as the states that are in Tornado Alley.
About Tornado Florida, okay.
Okay, and then Nebraska.
Okay.
Okay. So now I'm going to flip that question, and I'm going to say, I'm going to focus on three states that don't get a lot of tornadoes. And I want you to rank them from which state gets the most to which state gets the least.
So it's okay, kind of, most to least. Uh-huh.
Okay. The three states are, and I'm going to group all the states of New England as one state. So New England, West Virginia, and Montana. Which state, we'll start with Carly this time. New England as one entire state, West Virginia, Montana, which of those three gets the, on average, gets the most tornadoes per year?
West Virginia.
And then?
Montana, New England.
Tony?
I've got Montana first, West Virginia second, and New England third.
Okay, so you guys were close. Number one is West Virginia. Number two is Montana. And New England is really not known as a tornado area. So New England in its entirety has fewer tornadoes than all of West Virginia on average per year.
So I wasn't just close. I was 100% right.
So
four of them. No, you guys were close together, but Carly, you were 100% correct. Okay.
So I think that I won round one and you won round two.
Something like that.
Yes.
Going forward, as we do this week to week, we'll keep track and we'll tally them over time. And there'll be some prize for you guys at some point, maybe a t-shirt or something. Okay. So we are in tornado season. Which month of the year has the most tornadoes? March, May, August? We'll go to Tony this time. March, May, August.
I'm going to say May.
Followed by? Rank the risk.
March, yeah. May, March, August.
Carly?
August, March, May.
Okay. May by far has the most tornadoes. It's not even close. Then followed by August, and then followed by March. So there you go. May is the season, though. It's by far May has the most tornadoes. Okay, so here's a twist. Part of the reason why Texas has the most tornadoes is because it's a giant state. So when factoring for population, state size, inventory of property, number of deaths, okay? So basically, it's almost like a per capita number of tornadoes per state. Riskiest to least risky. Texas, Indiana, and Oklahoma. Based off of just the size, the number of people, the number of property, the number of large cities, all the stuff that's there to be insured and for potential fatalities. Which state do you think is the riskiest?
Is this actual experience or potential?
This is actual. And Tony, okay. I will send you the website before you post this so we can put it on the show notes so I can show where I got this information.
Go ahead. I think you go first this time.
Okay. Oklahoma, Texas, Indiana.
I got Indiana, Oklahoma, Texas.
Tony got it right.
Nice.
It's kind of a trick question, but Indiana is in Tornado Alley, and I'll show you the link. And they actually walk through all of the different calculations that they use to kind of get this apples to apples. But Indiana is the riskiest state in the country when it comes to tornadoes, because Texas is so big that, yeah, it gets a lot of tornadoes, but a lot of them just kind of spin there and don't do anything. It's out in the middle of nowhere. So it's Indiana, Oklahoma, then Texas. Indiana was number one of all the states. Surprisingly, Massachusetts was number two. And that is probably a skew in abnormality because they probably, the few tornadoes they did have, and this is going back like 50 years, probably hit a city or two and caused an unusual number of damage. But anyways. Okay, so I want you to, now the next question, there's an area, of the country where there's, where a tornado is actually going to cause more deaths. So I hate to be gruesome, but if you were alive and you were worried about actually living through a hurricane, which of these three states,
tornado or hurricane?
Did I say hurricane?
You said hurricane, yeah.
Sorry, tornado. And you'll see why I said hurricane. Which of these states would you not want to live in? That's essentially the question. Okay. So here are the three states. All three, by the way, are very high when it comes to tornado fatalities. But one is unusually high. So the states are Mississippi, Florida, and Kansas. Which state is the most dangerous when it comes to, which if you lived in that state, you'd be, the probability of you dying from a tornado is actually the highest.
Where to go?
Carly?
Florida, Mississippi, and the third one?
Kansas?
What was the third one? Kansas. Kansas. Florida, Mississippi, and Kansas.
I'm going to say Mississippi, Kansas, Florida. So I'm exactly backwards from you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Number one is Florida. And that's because Florida has that unique combination of a lot of average tornadoes and a huge population in a smaller geographical area. So Florida is unusual. Florida, you have the highest probability of dying from a tornado, followed by Mississippi. And then Kansas gets a lot of tornadoes, but there's just not a lot of people. So it's just not well populated. So here we go. Rank the risk. You guys like it?
I like it.
We'll do it again.
It's good.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll do it again.
Being a Nat Cat guy, I think the first few will probably have a Nat Cat feel, but I'll get them to we'll change it up. We'll move into other lines of business and other risks. We won't just stay with the macabre.
I can't wait for the board game version to come out, followed by the app version of Rank and Risk.
There you go.
This could be the business model. We might have found the business model.
There you go. Okay. Well, we've come to the end of Profiles and Risk. So as we usually end these shows, we go around the horn and to each of our co-hosts and guests, and we talk about the one thing or the two things that happened this past week that has made you happy or proud. Carly, ladies before gentlemen.
Last week, I attended the CPCU Society Leadership Summit and had a great time talking to a lot of old friends and colleagues, and I am excited to bring back some of that knowledge to the office and start applying it. How about you, Tony?
I am very, very, I was there for the conference, but I talked about that in last podcast because I was here. I am very, very happy that my girlfriend Renee and I have our next two trips booked, because as you guys don't know, we're passionate travelers. And the next two are Jamaica for Memorial Day and Peru. We're going to go do the Trail of the Inca, the Machu Picchu for 4th of July week. So very excited to have those booked up, and hopefully at some point that will have the credit card paid off. But at least they're in the book.
Fantastic. So on my side, my son turns one today. I can't believe how fast the year went by and how stressful it was. Holy cow. and now he's just about ready to walk. So it's just going to get better. thing that I'm proud of is I had a phone call with a friend who met a person at a flood conference in Washington, D.C., and my name came up, and I got a text getting glowing reviews. So I'm proud that I can make a difference and have people recognize me. So
awesome. Glowing reviews for your flood paper just my
flood acumen. Let's just call it that.
Oh, okay. Awesome. So overall flood.
Yes.
Fantastic.
All things flood.
So I'm wondering, like you've raised a kid before, so I'm wondering why this time the first year was stressful. I thought that at this point you know what you're doing.
Yeah, they say that. They say it's like riding a bike, but after you've been on the ride for a while, and it's like it's starting over. And plus, I'm a good 17 years older. So physically, it was more demanding, plus going through all the stuff that I've been going through with work and startups and all of that stuff. So it's a very stressful year. Very stressful.
Okay, makes sense.
So, okay.
Makes sense.
We've come to the end of the show. Carly, Tony, thank you.
Thank you, thank Nick. You.
Always fun.
Always fun. Okay. To the audience, we'll see you next week. And don't forget to rate us on iTunes or wherever else you're downloading us. Please give us a rating. Please share our podcast and give us the 4 or 5 stars we think we deserve. But please, we love the feedback. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.